you know, one of the things we did is we brought in a lower price point product to be more accessible to the market, because our mission is to kind of get out there as far and wide as we can. Take a BMW. The classic jersey is a luxury BMW, the high end. You've got leather seats, you've got air conditioning, you've got heating. And then the race version of it is a stock car. But I think one of the things I have always loved is learning new things and get energized from that.
Daniel, good to see you.
Good to see you.
First real question is, are you a cyclist?
Am I a cyclist? Yes. Probably, well, I am a cyclist. Yeah, definitely. I'm a different type of cyclist than I was probably 5 years ago and 10 years ago and 2 years ago. Because at the moment I've got four children, two young ones, and I'm more of a kind of everyday commuter rather than the kind of long distance.
How did you start cycling? Was it ever competitively or
no? Never competitive for me. I mean, competitive with my friends. So growing up, did a lot of, like a lot of children, just kind of hung around on our bikes, kind of getting into trouble. I had a mountain bike, a BMX bike, and then it wasn't until I was probably about in my mid-20s that I started mountain biking again. And then when I was about 28, 29, just at the end of Lance's career, I started getting kind of back into the Tour de France, and then kind of discovered the road bike. And then for the next kind of 5 or 6 years, I was obsessed with it. And that kind of led me to Rafa.
Lance, we spoke about Lance, one of the investors of Terra is Lance. He has been fantastic as of today. But great to hear. What led you into Rafa?
So I used to work for Topshop, so a fast fashion company that actually weren't based too far from here, just off Oxford Street. And one day I was in the Rafa store, and I just kind of looked around and thought this would be a cool place to work. And then I went on the website, and there was the perfect job for me then. So I kind of applied there and then on the website.
Heard was it the clubhouse in London?
Yeah. Brewer Street, just down there. Yeah. So kind of not as big as it is now, but half the side, but the same kind of vibe, you know, full of cyclists, you know, just probably the coolest place around at the time. So I applied, got an interview a couple of weeks later, spoke to them 3 or 4 times, and then I was there.
And what was your first role?
Head of merchandising.
What were you doing there?
So that's the kind of planning and the range, the buying of the range, then the products, working with suppliers, and then selling the stock. So pricing, the amount you buy, when you mark it down, the product life cycle.
So how big was the product line then?
I'm not sure the exact numbers of the product line, but in terms of jerseys, we kind of had like 4 or 5 jerseys in the range. So we had the classic jersey, which was the one obviously that the brand started with. We had the Brevet jersey and a couple of lightweight versions, and then the protein, the kind of race jersey. So it was a much, much smaller range. And then we obviously had some bib shorts and a few jackets and that to go with it. But yeah, the range was a lot smaller then.
And in those days that you joined, what stage was it for Rafa? How many people were around?
So when I joined, so the company wasn't that big, and it was based in Kentish Town in North London in quite a small office, but the company had 100 people. There. So it had a lot of people for the size of the company it was. And that's because right from the start, Simon really wanted to build that kind of community. And there was a lot of people in the region. So in the markets that we were building in, so in the US, in Seoul, in Tokyo, and in Australia and Sydney and Melbourne, places like that, we already had a good footprint. And we put people on the ground in their marketing teams on the ground to run the community aspect of the brand.
How many years did you spend in that role?
So I was in that role for a couple of years, and then inherited the supply chain side of it. So at the time, it was kind of my team were buying and planning, and then the supply chain team were going off and buying it. So we pulled those two kind of areas into one, which was great because it allowed us to think about things a bit more strategically. And holistically. So, you know, one of the things we did is we brought in a lower price point product to be more accessible to the market, because back then in 2012, Rafa were very much at the premium end of the market. And our mission is to kind of get out there as far and wide as we can. So we wanted to inspire more cyclists. So we did a lower priced range. And in order to do that, we were the first rule was we had to keep the Rafa quality. So we had to kind of move around, find a different supply base, and we were able to do that because of the joined up approach.
So how do you tactically do that? Do you find different suppliers in different countries? And do you take everything in-house? How did it work?
So yeah, so we've got an excellent supply chain. So the first thing we will do is be really clear on the brief of the product. What product are we trying to make? What is the performance aspects of the fabrics? And then what price do we need to pay to be able to make it profitable and the right price for the market? So when you've got all that information, we've got the experts in the team then who've got knowledge of the different areas. So, you know, whether that be Asia or Europe, they've got good knowledge there, good contacts, and then they'll start looking for new partners for those new products.
And you spend in that role another year and a half, I believe?
About another couple of years. Yeah. And then gradually kind of inherited a few more departments. So the product engineering team was the next one to come along. So that was the magical team almost in the middle that take the designs from the design team and turn those designs into actual products with our suppliers. So that was a real kind of a stretch for me and a new role. Luckily had some really great senior people in there that I was able to learn off, although I never learned as much off of them as I probably could have. And it was it was very different to the roles I'd done previously, where they'd been a lot more planning based and numbers based. You know, this was kind of working with people who were real craftsmen and
Can you walk me through that process a bit? Like, how does a product from the beginning to the end, what's the cycle to get into the hands of a user?
Yeah, sure. So I kind of call it almost it's a cycle of like customer to customer in the end. So we will always start with the consumer and the consumer needs. And I think what's so great about Rafa right from the start is that everyone who works there is a cyclist. So you've got this really great, already got a great understanding of products and everyone there rides with other cyclists, rides with our customers. But we'll really mine the information and we'll try and solve the problems of customers. We also work now with the pro teams in the Peloton, so EF and formerly obviously Team Sky. And they bring, they're great because they bring with them another set of problems that you have to solve. So you have all that information to you. So what are the key problems we need to solve? What are the innovations? So is there any new fabrics, any new technologies? And then you have the commercial needs of the business. So that was a good example I used just then with the price. You might need a lower price point product, or when I was there, it was, you had a couple of jerseys and jerseys were doing very well and our customer base was growing and they wanted to buy more stars, whether that be more colors. So you have that kind of commercial information, how to grow the business. And then when you've got all that, you kind of sit down at the start of the season. The design team will have a creative concept. So you have that creative vision. And then you just kind of sit down at the start and with all that information armed with that and start kind of hashing it out what you want to come up with from a product point of view. You'll have like first ideas, first concepts. And then as you develop through the critical path, you'll get them kind of more and more secure. And then you'll get to a point where you'll sign off the line list you're going to work on for that season, which will involve the new products.
You spoke about the pro teams.
Yeah.
What is the difference in the products that a pro athlete needs versus the everyday cyclist?
So very different, actually.
Very different.
Yeah, right. The best example I was ever told was by one of the designers who worked on the Team Sky kit when I first got there. And he compared it to cars. He said, making products for Rafa, he said, take a BMW. The classic jersey is a luxury BMW, the high end. You've got leather seats, you've got air conditioning, you've got heating. And then the race version of it is a stock car where everything's taken out. It's got, it needs to be as light as possible, as fast as possible, and do the purpose in hand. There's a few other extra things the products need, though. They need to be able to be washed again and again and again and again. And you'll notice on a lot of kind of our clothing, a lot of people's clothing, we recommend to wash at 30 degrees. They won't do that. The teams, you know, they'll stick it in these special machines that they've got on the bus. So it needs to be adaptable for them. You've also got the big thing is the way the model, the financial model of teams works, team sport and cycling. The product needs to be very clear in terms of the sponsorship and the advertising. And so we have to work really hard to ensure that we can make that clear on the TVs and that. So there's a, you know, obviously a big difference there.
Mm-hmm. Is there a difference in materials as well?
Yeah, there can be. Not always, as a rule. Essentially, a lot of it depends on the needs of the product. Generally, we do use the same products quite a lot. Obviously, if there's something that you know, like on the skin suits, the race suits, sometimes there's materials on there that are almost made for one or two big events, and they wouldn't be put in our range because they just wouldn't work. Mm. So yeah, we have to be obviously sensible when making products. But generally, yeah, it's our main range products are performance materials that are used the same as the team.
Mm. And that's until the product comes to the market. The next move when it comes to the market, how do people learn about it?
So we work very closely. The product team will work very closely with the marketing team. So and what we've moved towards doing now is trying to get the marketing team and the product team at the start thinking about the ideas, how we're going to take it to market right from the start of the process. So then they'll come up with a seasonal kind of launch campaign, what we're going to launch when. At which time, and then start working on the campaigns for the products, and under the kind of shadow of what our kind of big idea is for the season.
From those roles, you moved from merchandising to product and so on. Which one did you enjoy most?
It's funny because I feel like I've been on a real journey, because I used to love the merchandising side of it, the kind of the planning, the buy-in, and then seeing the results come to life, which is quite a long process because you know. We worked on getting it a lot quicker now, but back then it was you bought almost 2 years before you saw the results. So it was that the product side of it, the creative side, working closely with the designers and that, it was definitely a real stretch for me. But I think one of the things I have always loved is learning new things and get energized from that. So that was a struggle at times and sometimes difficult for me to get my head around because it's not my kind of natural where I've been schooled and, you know, have the experience in. That was definitely is, you know, one of the most fun areas working with those teams.
Mm. And I believe you into the leadership and senior positions, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And those
positions were?
So I've been in the leadership team. So I've done the chief commercial officer role, chief product and chief operations officer.
So that's really broad, I would say. You have a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
What can we learn? Maybe let's start with on the commercial side, because I believe Brava is probably the best cycling brand out there. From the commercial aspect, how much did the community play a role? How much did the brand play a role? Maybe let's get one of those topics and let's speak about it.
Yeah. So Rafa, we've got our values, and you know, one of them is the community is everything. So it was the thing I couldn't believe when I got there, actually, just how loyal the customers were. So coming from a fashion background where the customers would basically pick whoever was on trend, whoever had the best range, to see the repeat purchase rate, the amount of interactions with the brand was amazing to me. And you know, like, you could see what a big eye-opener it was. And that was always Simon's vision from the start. You know, the amount of times I kind of had drummed it, you know, or I can hear it, you know, when I'm asleep, like, we'll build long-term relationships. We need to build long-term relationships again and again and again and again. And everything we did was designed to do that. It was almost one of his, he hated the thought of just selling stuff. He used to, you know, because I was coming in as the commercial guy. And I think he was a bit kind of wary of me. You know, it's like, we're not just ever just going to sell stuff. We're not going to sell stuff. And I asked him one day, I said, you know, what are we? Are we a product company? And before I finished saying it, he kind of shot it down and said, no, we're a brand. We're a marketing company. We're there for our consumers, and we're there for the customers. So everything we did was about trying to kind of improve the life of cyclists and building that real community. So I asked Simon the other day, actually, about the clubhouse. You know, why did you start the clubhouse? What was your kind of idea at the time? And he was really clear. He said there was nowhere for cyclists to kind of gather and meet for rides, speak about those rides after, and watch racing. So you know, there was no kind of GCN back then, no good coverage as there is now. You had to kind of record it and then watch it on your own at home. So to create these kind of beautiful clubhouses in, like, you know, the best cities around the world where people can come in, ride there, you know, like, hang out, have a coffee and watch races was really important to us. And for me, that's really, you know, really what the brand is. When you peel everything back, you know, you've got a website that's, you know, somewhere out there in cyberspace that doesn't really exist. We've got stores, you know, bricks and mortar stores, which is real, which a lot of other people haven't got. But if without that community and without those customers, I don't think you really have a brand.
Mm. And can we be a bit more specific about the clubhouse? Yesterday I've been there, and one, you have the retail shop that basically you can get and you can buy products. Also, you can ride with your bike.
Yeah,
you can get a bike there, or you can rent a bike, I believe. And also, I saw on the wall a lot of the new events that are coming up,
yeah,
and the new rides that are coming up that people can sign up to and do all that. Why this combination, and what else is there?
So our purpose, what Rafa exists for, is to inspire the world to live life by bike. You know, that is the kind of the halo in terms of everything we do. You know, I think people, when they think of companies and they think of businesses, they think it's all about making money. But our overarching aim is to get the world, you know, cycling and help them on that journey. So everything we do, you know, within our clubs, those rides, it is to do that, to promote that. And I think, you know, 10 years ago when I started to do Rafa, it was interesting that when people asked you who you worked for, like, and I'd answer Rafa, and they're like, who's that? And, you know, now to try and explain something, they're like, yeah, you know, cool, you know, not knowing. Whereas now everyone knows about them, and everyone you tell kind of automatically knows, you know, like, that's them, the cool cycling rep, or something along those lines. So, you know, the club, Brewer Street, it's a beautiful store, but it's in one place and it doesn't move, whereas the cycling, doing the rides, doing the community, doing all that almost takes the brand on the road and gets people into cycling, which is our, you know, like I said, it's our the reason we exist.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like the brand is the community.
Yeah. Well, the community is the brand. You can look at it both ways, yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, I've been lucky enough in my roles to kind of travel all over the world, you know, Europe, US, Asia, and ridden with so many different people in so many different events. And it really does, it's when you do it, you really do feel so connected, you know, and it makes the world almost feel a very small place through the brand. So, I think it is what makes our point of difference. I know a lot of other brands now in cycling are doing the same model, which is great, you know, because they're more people are going to get those experiences, and ultimately cycling will be the winner.
Mm. I've seen the events in Strava's World Festival 500 events, it's the
yeah.
name that are happening every year. Can you speak a bit about more about them? And why do they exist? Is it for the community again? Is it what was the purpose?
So it started off, and I've heard the story so many times, yeah, I'll probably still get it wrong. There was the designer at Rafa, one of the first people who worked there, Graham Rayburn, and he went off one Christmas and wanted to challenge himself because he was kind of fed up of staying in and eating and, you know, getting unfit. So he challenged himself to do 500 kilometres in the time between Christmas Eve and New Year's. And from there, it just kind of became a thing, you know, initially in the office, and then they made it a customer-facing thing. And yeah, it's just become this event that's just really gained traction. And every year we do a big run up to it, kind of like do training guides, and we'll do some kind of merchandise for people to celebrate doing it. But yeah, it's one of those events that just seems to really inspire kind of existing cyclists, people who are really kind of fit, but also new cyclists. And it's pretty, you know, it's a pretty brutal time of the year in the UK, at least,
yeah.
and most of the US to ride in. But although, you know, a lot of our customers in Asia and, you know, Australia and that have a much better experience. But the other one we do is the Women's 100 ride, which is 100 kilometres a day. And, generally, we try and do it in the summer in the better weather. But that's probably my favourite event over the festival engine, because you just get so many people doing it for the first time, that women. And there's a real kind of camaraderie on the day, and you hear some amazing stories. And I think that's the event that really kind of hits the nail on the head about what we're trying to kind of achieve in the world.
If you remove Rafa, what is community for you?
I was chatting to the lady who runs our RCC this week. And for me, it's a sense of belonging to something. That feeling where you're with people and it just feels like it's yours, and and you belong there, and you feel comfortable there, and you know that they've kind of got your back and they're there for you, and you can do things together that you enjoy. And it's very kind of, for me, it's very, very simple and very and nothing clever. And that's why I think it's essential that when businesses do these type of communities, they are genuine. And that is what is at the core. So for us, it's about riding. It's about riding bikes around, and obviously our clubhouses play a key role in that. And, we see that in the future, actually, kind of doubling down on that and making it more about cycling, more about rides, more about that community aspect.
During COVID, by the way, what was the situation with Rafa? What did you experience?
So it was that
during COVID.
COVID. So it was a crazy time. When it started off, we were all really worried. Obviously, everyone for personal reasons, but from a business point of view, we thought it was going to be a really tough time. We just assumed that the bottom would fall out of the market. So the first thing we did was took measures to cut our costs as much as possible. Mm-hmm. To cancel stock, cancel orders, if we couldn't cancel them, could we delay them with the suppliers? And then I remember we were in a board meeting, and the chairman went around the room and said, "Oh, what's everyone's biggest worry?" And it came to me, and I just kind of thought, I don't know, it just feels like maybe we've kind of got this wrong, just got a feeling. And then for a few days, it looked like the right decision. Sales dropped off, and we were quite comfortable with it. Then to get as much cash into the business as possible to kind of take us through that what we thought was going to be a really fallow period. We put a promotion on, and it just went nuts. Absolutely nuts. We actually thought the website was the data board that broke. We thought that maybe was broke. It was just crazy, and people started chopping. Then we left it on for a couple of days, and then took it off because it was just, we were selling too much. And then from then on, for probably the next 18 months, sales were just enormous. And obviously we were back on the phone to the suppliers saying, that stock we cancelled, can we have it in, and can we have more? So from that point of view, commercially, it was an amazing time. It was tough from a culture point of view in the company. So obviously we were a very creative-led business, where collaboration is important. All of a sudden, we were doing a lot of tasks at home, and we used to joke around about the range of views we've done in people's bedrooms, and we kind of shipped equipment all over the country, and people were doing really technical work in their mums and dads' garages, and that. So that was tough, because we were as well as the community aspects, the customers and the head office is a real community.
Were you still running the RCC events?
We did where we could. So obviously, in the UK, you weren't allowed to ride in groups, but there were certain pockets in the world where you could at certain times. So we were just really, really flexible. As soon as we could, we would run that and go doing. But yeah, I thought it was an amazing time for cycling. It was amazing to see, particularly in the big cities, just so many people and so many young kids kind of get out there. But I mean, I know for my daughter, she did loads of riding during that time. All of a sudden, it kind of felt a lot safer to allow her onto the roads that at her age I probably wouldn't before. So that was great.
And how does a new customer today learn about that?
I'm not sure if this stat is still up to date, but 60% of our customers used to learn about Rafa from seeing a product on the road or or through advocacy, people, you know, telling them about it. I think that number is probably a bit lower now. So, you know, this is our kind of marketing model is through our clubhouses. So that, you know, that's why they're there to drive awareness in the whole, like we just talked about them, the kind of micro environment around them. We have obviously the teams. So we have EF, men's and women's team. We have Legion in the US. We have a number of ambassadors, male and female. We do all kind of different types of events. We've got a lot through press, but we have had more and more of our reliance on the kind of digital marketing side of it, you know, so trying to push through social, through digital advertising and people like.
I would be wondering what is the through the athlete endorsement, for example, what is the benefit for Rapa? Is it that more people are going to see the athlete, or is there some things that we don't see?
So I think the first thing is, like I said earlier, they push us. So JV, the head of the team, is very much all about performance and always trying to kind of push us. You know, what have you got for us this year? What have you got for us to make the difference? So obviously in a lot of the events, those kind of seconds count. So they'll push us. They'll bring innovations to us. Which will then kind of, you know, like make us work with innovative companies around the world to bring these ideas to life. There's definitely the awareness piece. So people see our, you know, the armband on the Tour de France. Obviously, it gives us the opportunity to do big events, like, you know, like the Palace collaboration we've done a couple of times. It gives you the opportunity to do those kind of collaborations, which then blows up outside cycling. You might have noticed the on Netflix, the new Unchained documentary. Obviously, that's gone to, you know, the exposure to that has been huge, and you know we're kind of prominent on a lot of the shots and a lot of the movies in there. So that's the kind of the awareness piece. And then I also think from a customer point of view, if you know your product is being used in what is probably the toughest endurance event on the planet, you know, over 3 weeks of racing in the Tour de France, kind of maybe a couple of thousand miles, if your product can stand up to those tests and win races, then obviously it endorses it hugely for customers and gives you that tick.
Speaking of Netflix, how much does videos and movies like that
It's hard to tell, really. I mean, the funny thing is we've had a bit of a run of on Netflix recently. So on the Drive to Survive, Mick Schumacher was on his episode. He was head to toe in Rafa. It's a great advert for us riding through the on the roads of Switzerland. And then even recently the series Beef. I don't know if you've watched that. There was a couple of scenes in there that Rafa was really prominent in. It's one of those things that's really hard to measure. We don't see huge kind of up spikes in it at that point in time. But you know, I think one of those is that you need to see things seven times before you kind of get, you know, awareness of them and stuff. So yeah, it can only help, I think, things like that.
Another aspect from the digital products, let's say, it's I've seen that the app you have is only for members.
Yeah.
Why was that choice made?
It was because the aim of the app is to connect the kind of that membership and that community. So we did debate, and we have debated, and we continue to debate: should the app be for everyone? And I do think at a point in time it will be. At the moment, it is one of the kind of perks for the club to have that app that helps you kind of connect, find people to ride with, to organise rides, to kind of communicate with each other. But yeah, I think in the future, definitely, I'd see whether it is an app or it's on the website, but that kind of ultimate way of communicating, connecting customers with each other is the way to go.
And speaking of the website, would you say, apart from the store, what are you trying to convey to people around the world?
So we want to inspire people to ride and inspire people to cycle. So the website is not just a kind of standard off the shelf website. We've got things on there that allow us to kind of share beautiful content, show the stuff we make, some beautiful videos, the photography, the long form writing. But yeah, everything that goes on that site is to try and inspire customers to ride.
I think one of the very interesting aspects when building such a fantastic company with exceptional brand and awareness around the world is the people behind the company. So how would you describe the values of the company?
Yeah.
And the people that are working around you?
Yeah. So the people are everything at Rafa. I was chatting to someone the other day and was saying that if you work in a kind of standard business, you just create something that needs to tick over and keep going. You can't have anyone, but you can get a skill set and you can build on it. But when we're trying to kind of do what we do, keep kind of reinventing the wheel almost, and making stuff that is kind of right at the cutting edge of core of innovation, you need a continuous kind of flow of new ideas and young superstars. Really, that's the best way to explain them. So we're very much about kind of building that culture. So our aim at Rafa is to be the best place in the world for cyclists to work. Mm-hmm. So the office is built around that. We want to make the office basically feels like a clubhouse. That's the kind of the aim, and we use the same design agency to do it. But so within the office, we've got kind of you roll in, you've got a big bike shed, big bike space there, and we've got an on-site mechanic. That we pay for the staff. We've got showers. We've got a bike studio upstairs where people can ride on the bikes. Subsidised food and drink, really healthy, nice, good food. And we try and make that kind of environment perfect for cyclists. And when you come in on the ground floor, it looks and feels like the cycling club. The clubhouse, you've got the TV on with the cycling on all the time, and wherever the latest event is kind of really emphasized that. It's key to us though.
And what about the values you would say that you're looking at unifying?
So our values are really clear. So we've got four leading values here that I've got in front of me. So it's love the sport, think for yourself, suffer and inspire others. We really encourage and we try and inspire our staff to love the sport. So on a Monday morning, we have a big town hall meeting every Monday morning at 10. And we always start it off with the highlights from the week in terms of racing, what's happened, and we get someone to come up and give their interpretation of the week. We'll celebrate all of the riding that our staff have done that week, any events they've done, and kind of recognize them in that way. So we're always it's essential to us to keep that kind of culture going. Mm-hmm. We have Wednesday mornings free for staff to ride, so we encourage them to ride with either their colleagues or customers, and then finish the ride at head office. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those kind of unique things, I think, of Rafa that makes it special.
Yeah, speaking of the values you mentioned. You mentioned the third one is supper.
Yeah.
It's one of the. I was doing some reading yesterday and I saw that. That aligns to Terra, and we're here now.
Yeah.
But how comes and. I would guess you would have a lot of pushback when you have something like that. I would understand it perfectly because if you're a cyclist, you need to go through the struggle in order to get results.
Yeah.
But how do you interpret it?
So it is exactly that, really. So and it is one of those that because we kind of reissued these a couple of years ago, it was one of the big discussions that we had. Is it right that we still include the word suffer in there with the negative connotations to it? But it is really about that cycling experience, and it's you take a kind of big long climb when you're in the Alps, when you're kind of. You're going up, you're churning up, you get to that point where the suffering is awful, but then you push through it, and then the kind of glory that comes after it, that feeling of achievement, and you get to the top, you get the view, the magic, if you've done it with friends, the kind of pride and camaraderie, it is about that. And going back to that kind of what I said just a minute ago about us having to just keep doing new things and being what's before and being better. Sometimes you've got to go through that kind of that suffering element to do it. So it's not that we want to make our staff's life miserable or anything like that. I mean, I'm sure sometimes, like I know sometimes we do stuff inadvertently that does make it hard for people. But no, it's not the negative connotations. It is looking at it through the cycle sides and that kind of glory through suffering.
Mm. Thoughts on companies like Swift or similar that they're doing cycling in the metaverse? What are your impressions?
I think it's been amazing for cycling. Absolutely amazing. And you know, it used to be, you know, when I kind of started doing it, used to find the winters really, really tough, and we would go out like rain or shine. But I definitely think it's enabled and it's really opened up the market to more and more people to do it, and also the people that did do it before it. I think it's enabled them to take their fitness levels and, you know, ability, and particularly those who race to another level. So, you know, I think that's very much built on community aspects as well. So, you know, almost like the gaming kind of side of it, where people are continuously connected, they're alive with their friends, they do that. And obviously during COVID, it was a lifesaver for a lot of people who couldn't get out on the bikes. Without it, there would have been a lot of people that would have, you know, struggled a lot without it. So yeah, I think it's, for me, it's completely positive.
And last question, I usually like to ask about the future.
Yeah.
What should we expect by next year from Rafa? And what about 5 years from today?
So next year, so we're very much focusing on our kind of core range, our on-bike range, our core offering, and the innovation side of it. So next year, there's a lot of new stuff coming out on our protein range. So we'll have a kind of complete new kind of race outfit, jerseys, bibs. Hopefully we're trying to push through a new style at the moment, having a few issues with the testing and that. So that's a big thing about next year, exciting sunglasses. We're also, and kind of, which is a good segue into the 5 year view, we're also trying to build that lifestyle range for our customers as well. So what we want to bring to our, you know, our customers initially is products that are use that kind of expertise, use the functionality of our performance fabrics, and create a comfortable wardrobe that they can use to kind of get around town, get through their day.
Mm. So lifestyle is in, I would be able to wear through my work, for example, or when I'm going around. How do you make such a decision? This is a very strategic, I would say. How do you make that
decision? Yeah, so, well, the decision probably was made 3 or 4 years into Rafa when Simon made it himself. So he basically created a commuting stripe office range that could be used. So some amazing products, collaborators, some great people, but they were in performance fabrics that you could kind of do a pretty intense commute and get to work and be fine, wear those products throughout the day. So from a business point of view, in order to achieve our purpose to, you know, inspire the world to live life by bike, just focusing on a small kind of part of the market, like the road bike market or the road, it's too small and we're never going to achieve our goals. So we need to kind of get out there, get in front of more people, get the product out there and tell the story of cycling and show people what kind of positive influence it can have on their life. So we feel through the lifestyle business, that's the way of doing it, opening it up to more people, getting in front of non-cyclists. And it might be that, you know, people who've never cycled before see our product, fall in love with it and buy it. And then that might then inspire them to cycle, which is great. Mm. Or it might not. If it doesn't, you know, we haven't lost anything. And the brand, you know, the brand and the product's out there.
Excellent. Yeah. Thanks for the chat.
Thanks very much.